Greetings and salutations, everyone. Once again, this is AC2GS. My name is Roy. I'm net control operator for this, the Limark Technical Net. Been going strong 43-plus years. Every Sunday night at around 8 p.m., we sit in front of our radios and inform each other, educate each other, learn from each other, and hopefully entertain each other. And I thank you all for returning this Sunday night at 8 p.m. when we try to do it all over again. Let me drop, and I will return with the usual links. If you would like to reach me via email, that would be either for mailbag questions, the questions that you would normally ask during the technical net, but you're not in radio contact with the repeater at the time. Or if you have a topic, if something comes up in the news and you feel that you can share your knowledge of that topic with others, or if you have a TechNet puzzle, I finally collected another little TechNet puzzle for tonight, hopefully. We'll see how the night goes. So if you want to reach me, email is mailbag@ac2gs.com, or an alternative address would be roy@limarktech.net. Also, you can let me know if you have a question for Paul, some space or NASA-related story. Or you can contact him directly. His email address is spacenetreport@gmail.com. And as always, every week I put together a link page of a bunch of interesting YouTubes and web stories that I come across during the previous week. And you can have access to it anytime you want. The page will stay up for almost ever. So just type into your browser roy.ac2gs.com or links. Limarktech.net. That'll bring you to the link page. We have a chat room available. It's been real quiet for a couple of months, but you never know. Some chat might break out. You can get there by typing into your browser chat.ac2gs.com or chat.limarktech.net. We have an audio stream available. I initially set it up for the technical net for people who don't have radio access. But some people asked me to leave it on the rest of the week, so it streams Glen Oaks all week long. You can get there by typing into your browser technet.ac2gs.com or stream.limarktech.net. And as always, I'd like to remind people that Mike, KC2NJI, has a great archive site. It's called amateurradio.tv, and it has archives of the technical net that go as far back as September of 2006. So please avail yourself of it. So those are the links. Let me drop for a second, and I'll be back to tell you what we got planned. Well, as I mentioned before, I do have a TechNet puzzle. I don't really like to do it at the very beginning of the net or at the end of the net, someplace in the middle. So if we have some free time available, I will pull it out of my pocket and we'll try it out. It's a short one. It's not that complicated, and hopefully some people will enjoy it. We will go the usual route, which is questions, comments, topics for discussion. I will ask people to hit that push to talk and give me their first name and their call sign, and whether it's a question or a comment or a topic. And I would prefer if the first few are amateur radio related, since this is an amateur net. But, you know, we will attempt to discuss any field in science and technology as best we can. So that should take us approximately to 10:15. Paul, WS2N, will then present the SpaceNet report until approximately 11 p.m., and I will return to tie a bow on it and wish you all a good week. So that's the plan. And more likely than not, the All-Star link is going to be a little strange at times, so I might drop out, but if that's the case, give me a minute or two, and I will hopefully drop back in. So we'll see how that goes. Everyone, start your engines. If you have any questions or your comments or topics, please hit that push to talk and put your name on the list. Well, that certainly isn't a good sign.
AB2ACC, boy, I'm here listening on the side, but watching the game, but I'm here.
Okay, Charlie, I'm glad to hear you're here. Yeah, some people voiced a concern that the Super Bowl might oust the technical net. But I have confidence in you guys. We've gone through the Super Bowl tech nets more than a few times before and survived it. So I hope there's at least a few people with some questions or topics for discussion tonight. That would be nice. So if there's anyone like that out there, please hit that push to talk.
It's a shame, but completely unprepared, I just can't. You've got a few emails from the Hacking Vehicles, Vehicles with Twin Dogs Radio. We had Brian Cook. Oh, that you said it's not important. Well, we have a Tucker Carlson. in his interview. And eventually we have a ER. That end up beamforming and Russian supersonic under missile. But I didn't look at it for a few days. And I just came home, so I'm totally unprepared. But
okay, well, we'll see how that works out. It's going to be a little dicey since this is not the political net. But, you know, we'll see how the night progresses. Hopefully there'll be a few people who belly up to the bar with some amateur radio-related questions or topics tonight. Anyone out there? Yes, can you repeat yourself, please?
KC2SHO.
Oh, hello, John. Yeah, I saw you. I saw you on the on that web server thing that goes into the old stock. Good to have you aboard. Okay, I'll put you down. Let me see if I could rustle up one or two more before we get the wheels in motion. But thanks for checking in, and I appreciate your participation, John, as always. Anyone else want to put their name on the list? Let's tear their eyes away from the television set. Okay, I guess that was a very polite but silent no. Anyway, John, what's your topic or question for tonight?
Yeah, good evening, Roy. You know, what's on my mind right now is CTSS or PO phones, whatever you want to call them. I haven't looked online, but I did just throw a tone into my, threw a tone into my generator from my RF generator from my, you know, for my sine wave generator, and I was playing around and keying up the repeater here, trying to get the lowest possible signal I could into the receiver. But what occurred to me is what's the requirements for a PL tone and the stability of the PL tone into a receiver? How much wave or how much offset can those typically tolerate? And do those typically modulate at the full bandwidth? In other words, should I put a full 10 kilohertz, you know, plus and minus 5 from center frequency, or should I do something less? The question makes sense, I hope.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, I don't have a lot of information on that. My assumption is that although back in the days where I believe it was Motorola who created the private line technology that was called PL tones, that was then made rather generic and goes under the label CTSS or something, that they had exacting specifications. I assume that those have gone the way of all kinds of things, including signal meters, S meters and such, where there were guidelines, but almost no one pays attention to them. I assume it's more of a matter of what's doing the injecting and identifying of the PL tone. Could be repeater transceivers that are designed to be complete built-in repeaters like Yaesu's X2 now, I think they're into fusion repeater. Or the controllers that this repeater uses. There are two major companies that sell repeater controllers, and I assume that it's the specifications wired in, designed in, that make the difference. And I think they're adjustable, too, because I vaguely remember people discussing adjusting a PL tone detection levels on these controllers. So I don't know if there's a specific specification that people follow. I think there's broad guidelines, and I assume they inject it into the same transmitter stream that's producing the full bandwidth audio for regular transmission. How much plus or minus frequency, how high the microvolt levels, I think is tunable. Under those circumstances. Could be wrong. There's someone out there who has a lot more experience tweaking repeater settings and such. Feel free to correct me.
WB2EAV.
Yes, indeed, Ed. What can you give me on this?
All right. The rule of thumb, a lifetime or two ago, I haven't heard this grow up lately, but it was basically narrowband FM is a nominal 5 kilohertz deviation, and the PL tone should be 500 hertz, 10% deviation. It is not supposed to be overpowering. What the idea is, it has to be filtered out in the repeater. And if it comes in at the same level of audio as your voice, it makes it much more difficult, and you don't need that much. 500 hertz deviation as opposed to 500 hertz maximum deviation for voice was the rule of thumb. As far as the frequency is concerned, the tones are spaced every 2 hertz. Now, for this repeater, it's 136.5 hertz, and I would certainly keep it between 136 and 137. But it's almost always crystal controlled, and there are a number of, back in the day when every rig didn't come with a PL built in, a batch of us, you know, kind of homebrewed. I had published stuff in the Limox stuff, I think even one made it to QSC, about a little circuit that you put in a crystal and it generates 136.5 exactly. Any of that help?
Yeah, it's very helpful, Ed. Those are the specs and the standards. I wonder if they have continued on. As I mentioned earlier, there are published specifications for what an S signal is on a meter. You know, how many microvolts, microwatts they are. But my understanding is that a lot of companies have kind of change them over the years to suit whatever purpose they have. I wonder if that's to a degree the same thing that's gone on with controllers. I mean, there's only two companies that make controllers these days, so it'd probably be relatively easy to hunt down the specs for the two of them and figure out what they're doing. But that's very understandable, and I appreciate your insight into this. I've mentioned before, I have an SBR. I have a Flex 6700, which can actually be operated on 2 meters and 70 centimeters, and they have very primitive capability of working with repeaters. But it's so primitive that whereas my Baofeng will filter out a PL tone, yet my significantly more expensive than a Baofeng Flex 6700 lets the tone go right through. I have to kind of attack it at my equalizer, which isn't incredibly effective, but that's the way it is, unfortunately, with my Flex 6700. So I just thought I'd throw that little story out. But I thank you very much, Ed.
Actually, a little bit more, I have.
Certainly.
Yeah, based on something you heard, let me be clear. This is done at audio. This is injected into the modulation, modulator, the FM modulator, the same place as the voice audio is. But be careful. The voice amplifier often has a tailored frequency band, and this is subaudible, so if you're not careful, if you put it in too early, your microphone amplifier might take it out. Right, Lord?
Okay, yeah, that's understandable. And I have heard repeatedly people describing the PL tone as subaudible. But as you well know, we can hear 60 hertz, and we do it very often when we have problems with ground loops and such. So I think that the term subaudible for the PL tones is kind of a misnomer, because they're not. I mean, like I said, I heard them on my 6700 all the time.
Oh, Roy, I have to set you straight. Let me try that. No. You're talking about human hearing. Radio hearing is 300 to 3,000 hertz, and that's it.
Okay, so when they write subaudible, they do not mean anything to do with the human hearing. It's only a kind of a specification that the specs just have that spectrum as audible, and anything above or below it is either hyperaudible or subaudible. So in other words, a 8 kilohertz audio signal would be hyperaudio.
I've never heard that term used, but back. I don't know if it was probably in the 30s. The lab did a lot of testing on what kind of bandwidth the phone system needed to have recognizable voices. So it's the minimum bandwidth that gives you a recognizable voice. And they came up with 300 to 3,000 hertz, as opposed to human hearing, which is about 20 hertz to 20,000 hertz, give or take a little. And signal sideband filters now are like 300 to 3 kilohertz, which is a usable bandwidth of 2.7 kilohertz, but that's just building below it. But the idea being, they always try to filter out anything below 300 hertz. That might include stuff like the PL phones. It might take care of any kind of errant safety cycle hum. So they purposely cut out anything below 300 hertz. They take out anything above 3,000 hertz. Obviously, that would not work well for, broadcasting music, but that's considered the basis for understandable and recognizable voice. You have to recognize, say, yeah, that's Bob Thornton.
Okay, yeah, I've heard that and I've read that before. I didn't know it extended to the definition of subaudible. It's another one of those curious usages that I'm unfamiliar with and somewhat confused by. We talked months and months and months ago that astronomers have a very weird concept of what metals are. They basically believe, I think, everything but hydrogen is a metal. So it's an interesting, different use of the same word. So I will file the term subaudible as having multiple meanings.
Roy, you're making me have to do this to you. I didn't want to do this to you. Do you hear any 136.5 tone on my signal? No. Because it was filtered out. That's what you mean by subaudible.
Okay. It's open to interpretation. I got to open a dictionary or something. Just to show you how difficult I can be, I don't think the PL tone is injected in the All-Star link. So, because otherwise I have nothing that inherently subtracts it out. I'm talking through a computer and an internet provider and such. So in my case, the PL tone is going elsewhere, but not to me.
Well, something's got to split it up.
you have to have something to differentiate 133.5 from 300 to 3000. I mean, they have filters and software now. I mean, like, you know, these days, all the HF rigs have, you know, software filters. They've all stolen that from software-defined radios. Now it's become the standard to have a software audio filter. So it's just one more.
Yeah, I love my my SDR's filters. They're adjustable on the fly, and there's no ringing. You can have the sharpest cutoff that you want, the tightest skirt, and there's no ringing. Whereas to mimic that in hardware would require a lot of engineering smarts and a lot of components.
And whatever gave you the idea that doing it in software, it didn't take an awful lot of engineering smarts.
Well, it took smarts. I tend to think it was more of mathematicians and computer programmers. But, you know, I'll accept electrical engineers as well.
Well, you have to start with, you know, electrical engineering stuff and then convert it to software. So it's not a simple job. It's a fairly elaborate job. I have to develop very, very complicated algorithms to simulate things like, you know, Chebyshev filters and the like. So it's not easy. But the good news is, the beauty is, you know, once you have it down pat, you know, it's pretty much done. And also, as far as hardware is concerned, that's not entirely true, because to handle all that processing, you might need a fancier central processor, computer chip, than you otherwise might need. So you do add hardware, but it's just like you're making a fancier micro rather than all kinds of stuff spread all over a circuit board.
Yeah, well, I mean, ultimately, there is a kind of a general divide in electrical engineering between people in the analog field and people in the digital field. So the modern-day obvious digital filters are digital electronics as opposed to analog. I don't think they directly simulate the circuit methods of the classic filter designs. It's more of just manipulating bits. Probably they use some variation of fast Fourier transform and a whole bunch of other tricks. A couple years ago, when I was deep into SDR, I could have probably told you something more interesting about the algorithms that are used in manipulating a lot of the aspects of software-defined radio. And they are incredibly esoteric, and software, you know, it's kind of necessary to understand how software and algorithms work and how mathematics functions, as opposed to, you don't really need to know much about capacitors or inductors when you get to that point, because, again, they're all digital and they're just bit manipulations, but it's capable of doing great things, and I appreciate our modern age of digital filtering and digital signal processing. It's sort of changed things up. It still requires finesse from programmers, software algorithms that improve signal and limit noise. It's an art form in and of itself.
Wait a minute, Roy, wait a minute. Yeah, the fast Fourier transform is absolutely critical to such, you know, software-defined radio filtering, but it is a circuit, software, digitizes the analog voice signal coming in, it processes it to find the Fourier transform, which basically is a frequency representation, like the spectrum of it. And then by filtering the spectrum, by lopping off sections of the spectrum you don't want, you then run it back into the opposite of, you know, another Fourier transform to go back to analog. And please, Roy, do not make me smack you across the face with two rallies, two butterflies.
2N.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, I think I doubled with somebody else. I put my call out there, Brian.
Yes, Paul.
Okay, yeah, I just don't want to leave the PL story just yet. I'm just trying to understand something Ed said. You know, he's got a 136.5 hertz signal going out in his audio, in his radio. So he's saying that's going into the repeater. The repeater is hearing that, and then that's opening up, you know, so it gets transmitted out. But at the same time, it's also filtering it out, so that signal doesn't continue on. It sounds like that's what he's saying. Roy, is that right?
That is what I'm saying. Can you go a little more slowly?
Oh, okay. Stand by. Okay. I didn't want to double. Okay, now, suppose you go, and, you know, somebody else listens to you on the repeater, on the input. This used to happen years ago when I got on. People were always testing the 2 meters, and, you know, somebody would get on, and then somebody else would listen to them, you know, on the input, and they'd be able to tell them, they'd say, hey, you know, yeah, I hear your PL, or your PL is there. What were they doing? Were they actually hearing it? Because, you know, now it's going direct. It's not going through a repeater machine. Or were they sitting there with an oscilloscope of some sort?
Comment. Let me point out something. You're assuming that their receiver does not take out anything below 300 hertz. And if it doesn't, that's true. But remember, usually the repeater, although the Glen Oaks repeater is the exception, they do not transmit 136.5. So if you're listening to Glen Oaks repeater, you will not hear a PL. But that's the exception to the rule, because they had some interference problem, and that was a kind of off-the-wall solution. But in general, so my receiver is filtering out below 300, throwing it away, 300 to 3,000, passing it, and throwing it away above 3,000. So it's possible that if their radio has it built in, that filtering built in, to take out the repeater PL, then they won't hear it. So you have to be very careful about your audio bandwidth might be, you know, working for you or against you.
Okay, very good. I know it used to be, well, it was very popular at the time. Some of the guys didn't have any PL at all. My first radio was an HD, and you had these dip switches, and you had to make sure they were in the right position, and people were always checking, you know, in the beginning when they would start trying to get on a repeater whether or not their PL was on or not, and whether they had it set for the right frequency. But very good. Roy, back to you.
And I'll tell you the exact schematic they used for that.
Comment, Venture BHZ Mobile, Echo.
Yes, this is AC2GS. Ken from South Dakota, recognized. What would you like to say, Ken?
Yes, PL is a trademark of Motorola, who invented that. It stands for Private Line. Continuous Tone Coded 12 System, CTCSS, is what it's called generally, right? The history goes back to Motorola, Private Line. You don't need squelch for Private Line. If you both have it on, you don't need squelch, because then you only hear nothing until somebody comes in with the Private Line tone, the PL tone. And then when the PL zone comes in, Motorola created this. You don't need squelch. They can come in, and this is what it is. They can come, and I've used it like this. You can come in below the noise level. Squelch is normally set at the noise level.
But if you have the private line, the PL tone set, or the CCCSS, right? Private line is the Motorola trademark, PL, private line. It's generally called CCCSS, continuous tone coded 12 system. If you have it on, you don't need 12, because you don't hear anything until somebody breaks that tone. Once that tone is broken, they come in below the noise level, and it actually extends their distance because they're coming in below the squelch level, which is set at the noise level. And I wanted to throw that out there, and I know Ed's going to have comments on that. So that's my comment. It was a we're throwing around a PL, so I wanted to go back, pull the way back handle on what PL stands for. Over to next control.
Yeah, I got a comment.
Yeah, Ed recognized. I just want to comment to Ken. Yeah, I mentioned that it was the Motorola design, and it started as private line, but it's used more generically as CTCSS. It's a little bit more complicated, and always like to complicate things. So there are two tones. The PL tone, the private line tone, the way it's implemented, as far as I'm aware, in repeaters is from your radio to the repeater. You send the subaudible tone. It gets detected by the repeater. It opens the transmit and lets you be broadcasted while also removing that PL tone from your audio. Then the next level is what you alluded to, Ken, which nowadays is called tone squelch, which is the other way around. Now the repeater will inject a tone, a subaudible tone, and you can set your radio to break squelch when it detects that tone. That's very useful these days for repeaters that are capable of both digital and analog transmissions. And if you're trying to pick it up with using an analog radio, if you put a tone squelch on it, it won't give you the digital noise that otherwise you'd get. But that can be turned on and off. It's not implemented entirely in just the PL setting. Most repeaters, the PL tone and the tone squelch are identical, as Ed mentioned, for a bunch of interesting reasons. Limark has a different tone when it comes to the tone squelch as opposed to the PL tone. Ed?
Yeah, let me see. I mean, Ken is technically right, but I see a problem with that. Now, what you can do is you can go completely nuts. If you're using a very tightly controlled PL of, let's say, 136.5, which is standard for most repeaters on Long Island, and by the way, for anybody who doesn't know this, the reason they have all these repeaters on Long Island, there are repeaters on 146.85 all over the country. Now, they're more or less out of range, but sometimes you get 2 meter ground waves and the like, and it wafts in. And the purpose of that is a signal that doesn't have that does not turn on. So if you're monitoring the repeater, you're constantly being interrupted by a terribly noisy signal wafting in from another state. But as part of that, you can theoretically have a very narrow bandwidth detector on that 136.5 hertz. And you can get very, very good low-level signal detection. How well you can detect a signal depends very, very critically on the bandwidth. The narrower the bandwidth with the proper processing, the further down into the noise you go. The ultimate at being GPS, where it is below the noise, period. But you can build a very narrow bandwidth and open up the repeater. I hesitate to use squelch, because squelch usually is a specific kind of circuit that you use either PL or squelch. And I can get to that if you want, Roy, but the point I'm saying is you can open up the repeater, but the audio with a much wider bandwidth is now all noise. So yeah, you can open up the repeater to transmit absolutely pure noise when you get that far down into the mud.
voice.
Okay, very good. As a matter of fact, while you were conversing, I was recalling 5 or 6 years ago being a small member in a repeater tweaking attempt. And back then, they were actually adjusting the PL level, the subaudible filter that filters out the subaudible tones is not an infinite notch filter. It brings it down a certain number of decibels below most people's threshold to recognize the tone. But if you were to raise the level of the PL tone, which is possible on these controllers, you can have it audible for everyone. So it may be that the levels weren't set properly, or that the radio wasn't designed to block the subaudible tones. Going back to the previous question about how someone was able to recognize that their PL tones are being transmitted correctly.
I just noticed something. Maybe you should ask the fellow who started this. We may have left him in the dust.
I certainly hope not. I was going to kind of roll it back to him and see if we were answering any of the questions that he presented. John. Any comments to make at this time?
KD2FYU.
Yeah, I heard FYU there. I have several comments. Let me make sure I'm not doubling. One, the one gentleman said that you could have a signal very close to the noise floor. I feel like maybe it's a little more complicated than that. Because if you're really close to the noise floor, you're not going to be able to pick out that tone, I would think. Maybe perhaps it's more likely to deal with any, I'm going to draw a blank on the word I'm looking for at the moment. Unfortunately, there's a lag and a voltage deal when it comes to triggering the squelch. So the squelch has that... that lag to it. Oh boy, the word I'm looking for. Unbelievable. I was just thinking of it, and when you want to turn a transistor on or off, there's that window, for example. You're going to tell me what that's called, because at the moment the term is missing from my vocabulary. Anyway, so maybe, it helps alleviate that problem. But then again, maybe you need another transistor to do that. Now, the other question I had is the first commenter, sorry, I should have been writing down some call signs. He said 500 hertz. Now, is that plus or minus 500 hertz or 500 hertz total, meaning plus or minus 250 hertz for an adequate PL tone? Go ahead.
Plus or minus 250.
Comment about in the noise floor, then to VHC. I'm going to be losing the repeater in a minute.
Yeah, Ken, we'll get to you in a second. I don't know if John heard Ed. Ed said it was plus or minus 250 hertz. George, by the way, recognized, but because Ken's connection is dicey, as usual, he's coming out of South Dakota. So let's hand it over to Ken, and then from Ken we'll go back to you, George. So, Ken?
Thank you. I'm going to say 73 after this because I'm going into nowhere land. I have picked up station noise level of squelch, under the squelch level, below the squelch level. If you had squelch on, you would never have heard the station. Below squelch level, normal occurrence, using, on the radio. All of a sudden you heard a voice, they were below the squelch level because they were in the noise.
Ken, I think you've reached nowhere land. Your signal was breaking up and then it just went away. So I see you're still up there on EchoLink, but sometimes that link stays up, it's gone. Oh, well, Ken lost his connection. That was it for tonight, probably, but I'm sure we'll speak to him again next Sunday. George, you wanted to say something?
Hey, C2GS, KD2FIU.
Driving,
yes. Bye-bye. The subaudible tone levels that we hear as the CTCSS tones to open repeaters, not the return tones that we need to sometimes open our squelch. In the reverse mode, those tones are totally audible. The repeater is suppressing them. No question about it. Because you can hear 60 cycles if an audio system is going to give it to you. It's there. It's there. As a matter of fact, most human ears can hear down to about 30 cycles when you're younger. Maybe 20 if you have super good hearing. And some people's hearing stays with them for a long time. But 88 to 256, or was it 82 to 256, is totally audible. So the radio is really squelching that out as far as the output signal goes. Another thing is, when we're working in the dual mode, CTCSS in and the DCTSS out, they're two different programs of mode. We can hear these tones, but the repeater is suppressing them. Back to you, Roy, and I'm back to the game. I'll listen to you, Roy, for another minute or two. Katie, for you, my friend.
Okay, very good, George. Hope you enjoy the game. Yeah, I mentioned a lot of that earlier. I mentioned that to Ed, that I could hear 60 cycles, and anyone who's had a return ground loop has heard 60-cycle noise. Ed's explanation is that it's more of an electrical engineering concept, that the suggested bandwidth for intelligent human voice is 300 to 3,000 hertz, and that anything above or below it is filtered out, and so it's thus considered subaudible because you can't hear it. Whereas I kind of look at things as though if a frequency I could hear as a human being, it's not inaudible to me, it's just filtered electronically. But like I mentioned also earlier, astronomers consider everything except helium to be a metal. You know, that includes sulfur, that includes neon gas. They have a very, very interesting description for what a metal means to them. So I assumed it was more of a situation where a word has more than one acceptable definition.
BDH with a comment.
KD2FIU.
Yes, you want to make a comment back, George? John recognized. I'll get to you in a second, John.
Yeah, Kenwood Stereo Systems and Panasonic Stereo Systems circa 1970 were boasting that they had actual 20 to 20,000 hertz response in their systems. And around maybe a year or two later, and I had been tested to go into AT&T Long Lines, which was the Bell Telephone, AT&T Bell Telephone division for long distance. And I was tested with about 32 hertz, 32 cycles, to about 18,200, and I came in very close to the 20 to 20 that was boasted in systems of manufacturing at the time.
The purpose of this narrowing is to save bandwidth, so you put a lot of signals onto a radio, you know, fan.
I'm trying to give you an example of human hearing. I don't have all of that right now. I'm still very close. I have very good human hearing. However, I'm trying to give you an example of human hearing. And if we were to say that all of these CTCSS tones are subaudible, they are simply not. They're repressed.
Yeah, you just said they're repressed.
Okay, so when I say they're not subaudible, I understand. You're kind of talking apples and oranges. George is talking about the bandwidth of perception in human hearing, which is unfortunately age-related. I checked my hearing recently, and I can't hear a thing above 10,000 hertz. The high end goes a lot more as you get older than the lower end, per se. This is kind of demonstrated. It's not as popular these days, but there used to be cell phone apps which would send signals at very high frequencies that teenagers and high schools could hear, but their teachers, unfortunately, because they were a little older, couldn't hear. So that's one thing. What Ed is discussing is the minimum bandwidth required for intelligible speech. So they're two different things. But, okay, so now this isn't subaudible. It's something else. Okay, I'll change my dictionary entry.
Oh, by the way, Roy, a little fun fact.
Yeah?
I once had to change the spec. I had to design an audio channel that did not meet the requirement we're talking about, that you were going to have two radios. One was a communications radio, the other was a direction finding radio, and we had very narrow bandwidth requirements. Let me not go into why. But I had to go down to a 1900 hertz bandwidth for the audio, and the idea was just to verify it's the same voice you're hearing on the communications radio. It's not really to be listened to on its own. It's just to verify the station you have the same station on both radios. So you could tolerate a tremendous amount of distortion. And at 1900, it was really bad.
Okay, I mean, I kind of do that with my Flex radio. I haven't gone that low. You know, on the fly, I can change the bandwidth of the received signal. So if bits of it are kind of ragged, I'll narrow it up. And, when you get to things like 1,000 hertz bandwidth, it gets to be a real strange-sounding transmission. I've tolerated, I think, as low as about 1500 hertz bandwidth. It's not great to listen to, but it's, you know, depending upon what the noise is created next to it on the band, it may be the only way for me to receive people. But yeah, there's guys on the other end of wacky who have extended single sideband reception and transmission. So those guys do it, their bandwidth is, I think, twice the amount. So it's something like a little bit less than 6,000 hertz. That's a waste of bandwidth.
Well, remember, reasons all the music stations these days are on FM, but you have comparatively huge bandwidth. So you can put in those high frequencies without spilling over into the next channel.
I understand that. I've listened to a couple of extended single sideband broadcast transmission type of things, and it sounds better. But I didn't quite understand what the point was. It's kind of fallen out of favor as far as I've perceived. I haven't seen too many really wide bandwidth transmissions in years now. But extended single sideband was a thing for a little while, unfortunately.
You know, I have a cure for single sideband signals. I've said it here before and got yelled at. You know, we're leaving out, is that Jim?
No, this was John, WA2VDH.
Did you give it to me, Yvonne?
Yes, John, please.
Oh, yeah. What I wanted to comment on, as far as the subaudible tones, okay, I'm listening right now on my TR-751, to this repeater, and the audio is fine. I don't hear any subaudible or PL tones. However, when I turn on my Yaesu, my FRG9600, which is several years old, one of the early DC to light receivers, and I tune in the repeater, this receiver has a wider audio bandwidth. I clearly hear a PL tone coming through there. I hear it as like a background hum, and it's definitely higher than 120 hertz. I'm not that musical, but it is definitely higher than 2x60 cycles, because I've heard the 120 cycle ripple on some radios that I've repaired. So I can hear the PL tone coming through on my Yaesu receiver, which has a much wider audio bandwidth, because that receiver was designed to give a better fidelity audio, since it covers the commercial FM bands also. But on my TR-751, I don't hear any PL tone at all coming out of the speaker. Go ahead.
I have a very important question.
Ask your question, Ed.
Are you listening to Glenn Osler or Sheldon? Because I believe Sheldon, absolutely. Glenn Osler, no, because Glenn Osler, they've intentionally turned off the PL on repeated transmit. Sheldon, I agree with you 1,000%.
I'm listening on 146.85, which I think is Glen Oaks.
But they supposedly have the PL turned off. You know, on transit. Received it.
Well, I just turned it on now, and I can hear the hum. It's a kind of that, not that musical at it, but I can hear it on my... on my Yaesu, but I don't hear it on the Kenwood.
I'm a little baffled by that. WD-380.
Well, Ed, you never know. The repeater crew might have turned back the tone squelch tone, so without telling us. So that's very possible. Yeah, John, I earlier I mentioned that on my Baofeng, I don't hear the subaudible tones. On my ICOM IC7100, I don't hear the subaudible quote tones. But on my Flex 6700, which costs a heck of a lot more than a Baofeng, it has no built-in filter for those subaudible tones. So I, too, heard the hum in the distance, and, you know, I recognized it for what it is. And so not all radios filter it out, is what it amounts to. I think the Baofeng filters it out simply because the sound reproduction transducer doesn't operate at that low a frequency, and more expensive radios just have built-in relatively simple filters to filter it out.
Well, you know what it is, Roy. This receiver, the FRG9600, I bought this, I guess it's going back 25, 30 years. It tunes 60 to 905 megahertz. So at the time I bought it, you could tune right through the audio channels of commercial TV. Like I could tune in the audio for channel 2 or channel 4 or 5. I could tune the commercial FM 88 to 108. So its audio system was designed to be somewhat higher fidelity, to respond not just to the voice band 300 to 3000, but to, you know, well below and well above the standard voice band 300 to 3 kilohertz range. Go ahead.
Okay, I understand, and you know that's the reason why you're hearing the PL tones. In my case, it's probably because they implemented everything in software. It's an SDR radio. And when they did their implementation of operating repeaters, you know, with splits between it and the other little, and injecting PL tones into the signal, I don't think anyone bothered to think about the squelch tones coming back, so I don't think they designed in any kind of built-in filters to filter out those tones. And as was mentioned repeatedly, as far as human beings go, the things called subaudible are not to the human hearing subaudible, but certainly if you filter them out, everything can become subaudible once you start filtering things.
Yeah, it's sort of a misnomer in wordage. Give you an idea how old this FIG9600 is. This receiver came out before they started blocking the old cell phone frequencies, the 800 megahertz cell phone frequency. So when I first got this receiver, I could actually listen to the old cell phone frequencies, except when the cell would hop channels, I had to go hunt for it again. But I could hear sometimes certain deals being made on the cell phone. Hi. Anyway, back to net.
Yeah, and despite the fact that analog cell phones are completely a thing of the past, they still block those frequencies from consumer radios to this very day. I'm not quite sure if this is just inertia on their part or what their thinking is.
Well, they're probably going to use those frequencies for something else, and they just don't want people to have access to them, period.
It's possible, but, you know, we live in a day where everything's kind of turning digital. Once you have a digital stream, it's very simple to encrypt it. More and more communications, as time goes on, we will find encrypted. I'm sort of surprised that police and fire departments didn't encrypt their transmissions decades ago. I think it was more of a technical inertia and expense. They didn't want to buy new radio systems that were capable of that feature. But they're starting to roll them out now, much to the chagrin of people who enjoyed using their scanners.
Yeah, I know now the military's encrypted.
Yeah, you two doubled, Ed and John. Yeah, I'm sure that the military is encrypted. I mean, one of the things I was talking about Mars to someone on some net, and the problem that I always had with Mars is because it's a military adjacent, they're not public about anything. So, you know, they try to recruit people, but you can't find out anything until you join, and it always struck me as weird. So I'm sure the military encrypts up the wazoo. But I thought the police and fire department would decades ago, and, you know, recently, unfortunately, reporters figured out that they could just kind of record what the police are doing during problematic events and play it on the radio and the television. So I think that has motivated police departments to shift to more encrypted technology.
Roy, I'm not saying I'm sure that I can give you the model numbers of the encryption unit.
Okay. Well, the model numbers probably aren't as useful as the specs and such. Because, you know, if you give me the model number, probably nothing's published about it because it's on a need-to-know basis.
Yeah, basically right. And, yeah. So, the model numbers themselves are classified. It's just it's been too long I don't remember them, but there's nothing on them on the Internet.
Yeah, I mean, I understand it, but it just got, you know, I mean, I'm curious about everything. And so when my eye turned to Mars and I realized the incredible scrubbing they had done, the Internet is completely void of any useful information regarding Mars, that you can't find anything out unless you join him, which, you know, I don't know. That almost sounds a little culty.
That was never the intent.
No, I'm sure it's not. I don't think Mars is a cult. I think Mars, as I said, is a military agenda.